The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Today I'm going to talk about the perfect Buddhist. I mean, every time I said that to anybody, they kind of laughed. Yes, perfect Buddhist, right? You know, this seems like a tangent, but it comes in. Somebody raised a question the other day about the meaning and the limits of the common advice to let it go and meditate on this. So I meditated on this, and independently, I talked to somebody recently about, you know, something. They were telling me that they were really trying to practice letting go, and it's been extremely helpful for them. And this person's been training for many years, but it was like a new thing. Oh, letting go, this is wonderful. You know how that is? You hear something for 1,000 years, and all of a sudden you get it. Oh, sit still. Whoa, you know. Well, let it go, you know. And this person was really practicing this, and it's great, you know. When somebody would express views different from theirs, they'd stop to feel themselves tightening up and think, wait a minute, it's okay, I can let it go, it's all right, and it was fine. Or they'd start to worry about something, you know, something that might happen, it's all right, it'll probably be okay, I don't have to worry, it's okay. This is extremely helpful, wonderful. Then I talked to somebody else who said, they were dealing, you know, struggling with anger, and people kept saying to them, oh, just let it go. And this was really annoying them because it wasn't that easy, you know. Just let it go, right, you know. So it wasn't that helpful for them. You know, we need to have skillful means when we apply these things, just as not just have a sort of, oh, just let it go, everything is fine, you know, we're the perfect Buddhist. I think we tend to have a view of this perfect Buddhist who doesn't get upset by anything, lets everything go, is universally mindful and compassionate and kind and training and composed and keeping the precepts perfectly and all that, meditating deeply, constantly. Well, of course, do we know anybody like this? No? We'd like to be, you know, the letting go thing, you know, like to let everything go, just let it all slide off. We'd like to be like ducks in the river. Every feather in place, you know, there they are looking perfect. They dive for a worm or something, come back up, every feather in place, looking perfect, you know. We think, how lovely, you know. But often we feel more like the chicken that's fallen in the river. It struggles out all wet and bedraggled and squawking, you know. Not the perfect Buddhist at all, but sometimes we feel much more like that. So we have to have compassion for this poor squawking chicken that we really often feel we are, and not try to be the perfect duck too much. Because when you know, practicing letting go of something, for instance, doesn't mean it goes away. It doesn't always go away. Sometimes it hangs around forever. And one of our monks likened it to being in, you know, in the soup with all the peas and carrots. Well, they don't just go away. You're just stewing there along with them, and they're all still there. And they might get a bit softer, but they don't go away, not in quite the same way, you know. But it doesn't mean we're not training with it. Just sitting still with all these things, relinquishing the grip a little bit, not grasping it quite so tightly, you know. Just relinquishing the grip. Anger, for instance, when we're really angry, you know, we're pressed right up against the thing, you know, nose squashed to the thing, and we can't see anything except this. We don't even realize we're angry sometimes because we're so caught up in it. Not the perfect Buddhist. And if we can just back off a little bit. Oh, I'm getting upset here. I better be careful. Just that little backing off, you know, gives us more perspective. We can see a bit more than just this nose-to-nose view. Oh, there's other people involved in this. Oh, maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. Oh, you know, maybe it's not quite what I think. Almost always when we're angry, there's something we don't know. When we see things in black and white, you know, this is the view, yes, there's something we're missing. it's a lot easier to take a position on something when you don't know much about it. And the more we learn, the harder it is to take a view, because you realize there's other people with different views, just as sane and wise as me, hard to believe it may be, but it's not as clear as I thought it was. It's grey, you know. But it's so easy to get polarized with views and, you know, things like that. Anyway, it's kind of an example of trying to apply something, and it's not always as easy as we think, not always as clear-cut as we think, it's not always simple. Views, you may think our view of things is the Buddhist view, the perfect Buddhist view. But in fact, Buddhists have all kinds of views. Political opinions, we may take it for granted that everybody thinks the way I do, and they don't. They don't. They have completely different views. People with deep training, deep wisdom and compassion may think completely differently from me. How about that for an idea, you know? Because we tend to think right view means my view, and it doesn't. But it's so easy to get all polarized and caught up and righteous and I see clearly and stuff, and actually, when it comes down to it, it's a view. But we, you know, there's a good heart here. We think things, feel things are really important. We want to do good. We want to be, well, like our election year, of course. We want, you know, good to prevail. We want wisdom, sanity, kindness, safety for people, people to be happy and not killing each other and all that. And we all have different ideas about how that would work. But we all really want the same thing when it comes down to it. People want just a safe place to live their life, raise their kids, you know, do their training in whatever way that is. And of course, the perfect Buddhist wouldn't get all upset about political views. A perfect Buddhist would be completely equanimous and let it all roll off and so forth. But of course, we're not the perfect Buddhist. And yet, this perfect Buddhist is often lurking there in the background, wagging his finger or her finger at us. You know, you shouldn't be doing that. You're not a perfect Buddhist. Perfect Buddhists do this. You know? And so many of us have this koan of trying to be perfect, trying to be the perfect Buddhist or the perfect something else, you know. The strain of trying to be perfect. It can be quite subtle, but there it is. Trying to live up to some expectation, whether it's ours or somebody else's. Ajahn Brahm wrote this book called Don't Worry, Be Grumpy, which is brilliant, you know, because he said, you know, so many people say you best practice mindfulness and be happy. Don't worry, be happy. So not only are you cross or worried, but you've also got to be happy, you know, and it just makes it miserable, you know. And so he said, just be grumpy if you're grumpy. Doesn't mean you had to bite somebody, but you don't have to try to be the perfect Buddhist, the perfect person. And I think that's quite an interesting observation. Living up to expectations of the perfect Buddhist. Well, of course, we try to do our best in training. You know, but that's not the same as trying to be perfect. Just trying to do our best. Trying to be kind. Trying to make the best of things. Do our best with things. But trying to be perfect, you know, it's a rather cold and sterile thing. Who really wants to be perfect when it comes down to it? Who wants a perfect friend, you know, or a perfect spouse or a perfect son or daughter? It would not be, you know, we love them for half, for what they are, and half of that's imperfection, really, because they're human and we are human. We love people for the way they are. Acceptance, you know, acceptance of the way things are, the way people are, the way we are, accepting our imperfections and our, you know, grumpiness and the chicken in the river, you know. Trying to look good, trying to do everything perfectly. When we're new in training, especially if we're monks, new monks, but anybody new to training, we try to do it all right. We try to bow the right way, make gassho the right way, do the incense offering the right way, and, you know, we don't always get it right. In fact, we don't care. We just want you here. We're just delighted to see everybody. But sometimes people think, I have to do it all right, you know. And we start, you know, policing ourselves or policing each other. We don't want that. Because the purpose of the forms is not to make us the perfect Buddhist. It's to help us go more deeply to realize that which is all pointing to. Stillness, reverence, seeing the greater thing. And making gassho and bowing and all these things help us to open up to that. We don't just do it as an exercise. We do it because it opens up the heart. And those of us who've been doing it for a long time know this. And we don't bow perfectly anymore anyway, so we don't have to worry. Just, you know, the perfect Buddhist can be quiet a bit. Opening the heart to faith and trust, that's what's important, much more than doing everything perfectly. The forms help, but they're not the point. The precepts. We try to keep to the precepts as best we can. And we can't do it perfectly. And often we find ourselves caught in the switches. There's no clean way out, in a sense. The other day I was talking to somebody about, you know, saying something about another person that may not be completely complimentary. Sometimes we have to say something about somebody else because we have to deal with a problem. And if we get stuck with too much trying to be perfect, we can't deal with things. Sometimes you have to say something about somebody else in order to, you know, figure out, how do we deal with this? What do we do? And when that happens, what's important, I think, is to be careful of our intention. What's my intention here? Am I just, you know, venting about somebody? Or actually am I trying to help with the problem? Am I being overly critical and judgmental about this person? Or can I see their good intention? Can I see them actually trying to do a good thing, but maybe in a way that annoys me or that I feel isn't helpful? Can I find some common ground, some way that we can help each other? Or rather than just having a negative view of them, like with politics, actually, we do all want the same things, fundamentally we do, and yet there's all these wildly divergent views. But if we can see that there is a common ground there, the wish for goodness and peace and truth to prevail, then that really helps us to overcome those differences and not just see people who think differently from me as foolish people over there. At best, foolish people over there. Not being able to keep to the precepts perfectly. Sometimes having to kind of get in the mud a bit. You know, Reverend Master used to say, in a monastery, the old monks are like the outer petals that get mud on them because they're dealing with messy situations sometimes. And they try to keep the inner petals, the newer monks, you know, away from that. They don't know how to deal with this stuff. But the old monks are getting muddy. They have to deal with these messy things. And sometimes there's no easy answer. You do your best to keep to the precepts. You do your best to, you know, try to do your best for all beings. Sometimes there's no easy way through. Sometimes no matter what you do, you're going to feel bad. You feel like the chicken in the river. No matter what, how you try to do it, it's just like that sometimes. And you just have to accept it. We want to be a duck, but we're a chicken. Back to the perfect Buddhist. Sometimes the perfect Buddhist tries to make everybody else the perfect Buddhist too. Everybody else has to keep the precepts, you know, not just me. Everybody else has to do it. Even when they're not Buddhists, they have to keep the precepts, you know. We can police people. And if we don't keep an eye on the perfect Buddhist, he can go around, you know, doing this, and then, you know, not so good. If we want other people to change, we have to change ourselves. If I want somebody to be quiet, I have to be quiet myself. If I'm shouting at someone, be quiet over there, why should they? If I just say, go up to them quietly and say, we're trying to be quiet, or I speak to them in a quiet voice, then they're like, oh, okay. It works much better than the perfect Buddhist, you know, stamping about. Helping by example, but not thinking, here I am being a good example and helping people. You know, just trying to do our training and trying to do our best and trying to be kind. Kindness. Compassion. Avalokiteshvara, first of all. They're everywhere. Kandyans everywhere in all different forms. somebody was saying it'd be nice if we just put up, you know, not just the pretty ladies, but the greengrocers and the tow truck man and you know, all these other people and the animals and all those things. There's so many forms of compassion, and kindness is everywhere. But you've got to start somewhere. So we have these images of Avalokiteshvara you've all been bowing to. Kindness is what we need to practice, not being perfect. Kindness to others, kindness to ourselves. Sometimes we hear this kindness to ourselves and we think, oh yes, I need to be kind to myself, I'm really hard on myself. And we forget about being kind to other beings. But I think often, when we're practicing kindness to other beings, then it's easy to be kind to ourselves, to do it that way around, rather than I had to be kind to myself first. Actually, to practice kindness to others helps us to relinquish that concern with ourself. It helps us to see that we're all actually part of one being. There's not a special me. So if I can be kind to other beings, well, I'm just another being too. I can be kind to me as well, without it being a special thing. We just practice kindness, relinquishing that separation of me and everybody else. We can even be kind to the perfect Buddhist. You know, there he is, or she, you know, all in the little corner getting all upset about something. It's okay, it's okay. Mm. Because the perfect Buddhist is trying to do his or her best, just trying to help, trying to do the right thing, sincerely, you know, but not always in the right way. And of course there isn't really a perfect Buddhist at all, it's just our shadowy ideal, you know. This ideal I'd like to be wise, kind, compassionate, equanimous, you know, letting everything go and all that. I'd like to be a duck. But no. To relinquish our selfishness, letting go, letting it slide, relinquishing my way, my opinions, my view of the perfect Buddhist, my view of myself, you know, being able to just see it and relinquish. Not getting rid of it, but just not gripping on. And as I said, it doesn't always go away right away. Perfect Buddhists may hang around for quite a while, may always be there. But we don't have to believe everything he says or she says. No. Just learning, trying to see clearly, seeing what our mind is up to, seeing what our intentions are. What am I trying to do here? And am I, like with the, you know, speaking about somebody else, am I really doing this out of a good heart, or am I just giving in to irritation and venting? And just to be honest with ourselves, you know. We'll never be a perfect Buddhist, but we can work on ourselves, work on our selfish views, our unkindness, our criticism, our ungenerous views, and so forth, just to relinquish some of that. Our thought of wanting to be better than other people, or thinking we're worse than other people, even thinking we're the same as other people, it's all me and other people. It's just we are part of other people. We are people. We're all people. We're not other anybody. They're all deluded, says the Buddha. All these ideas of me better than others, me worse than others, or any of that. They're all just views of a self, and it's not helpful. The perfection of Zen, the Rav Master talks about, you know. This is not the same as being the perfect Buddhist at all. The perfection of Zen goes far beyond our little views of what I think is perfect, what I think I'm like, what I think I want to be like, our little opinions and strivings and wantings to do better and all that. It's far beyond all of that. Yes, we do try to do better. We do try to keep to the precepts, obviously, to be practice kindness, compassion, particularly. But the perfection of Zen is limitless. It's something we kind of fling ourselves into rather than confine or define. We just have to fling ourselves out into that perfection and trust ourselves to it, the great matter for which we train. That's it.